This is When Orla Met, a conversation with and about some of the leading athletes, fascinating characters, and engaging brains in sport. Now, as sporting brains go, they don't get much bigger or more renowned than that of Dr. Steve Peters. The clinical psychiatrist cut his teeth working with some of the most dangerous criminals in Britain, but has become famous for the work he's done with Olympic champions and elite sports stars. His chimp management theory has not only helped the likes of Sir Chris Hoy to become one of the most successful British Olympians of all time, but has been used in many industries, from politics to finance to business, as a means of getting the very best out of ourselves. Now, I'm not going to do him a disservice by trying to summarise the theory so far, so if you missed the first part of my chat with him, you can download and listen on your usual podcast platforms right now. And if you've been waiting to find out what the third and most critical part of your brain is and how you can try to manage it for yourself, here's part two of When Orla Met Dr. Steve Peters.
The chimp and the human systems are basically interpreting the world and having a fight between themselves as to how to interpret it and what they want from it and how to react to it. The computer system is the most powerful, really. At the end of the day, we have what in the brain is a fallback position. So the chimp and human, in order to keep a memory, feed into the computer their memory and experience, or their desires, or their beliefs, or recognised behaviours, and they put them into the computer system so that the computer can remind them of what they've learned. So what we do is we store these memories to remind us. So if I go back to crossing the road, and let's say I'm 7 years old and I don't think, and I go out, and a car just misses me. So it could have been tragic. That goes into my memory bank so that what happens next is... Do you want to keep going?
Yeah, I should just explain that we're recording this at a friend's house and they've got an 11-month-old baby. So if you can hear any wailing in the background, that's what it is. But I think we're okay to keep going.
We'll keep going.
Yeah, we'll blame his chimp.
Right. So what we got is I've got this memory that I place in it. Now, it depends what I at 7-year-old place in that and what my mum or dad might say or guardian would say to me. I put a belief in that you were lucky, but one day you won't be lucky. If that goes in, then my belief now is I'm really quite frightened about crossing a road. I'm so apprehensive. Whereas if they put in the belief, now that was silly, but as long as you look both ways and as long as you listen, you're fine. Then I'm much more relaxed. And as an adult, I'll do one. I'm being severe to drive the point. What happens at 7 will dictate what goes in that computer memory bank. And then even at 27, 37, when I go to cross the road, that will unconsciously immediately remind me of the belief that I'm holding, which means that my emotions are affected by the computer. And the good news is, and it is good news, that both human and chimp systems necessarily have to confer with the computer before they move. And it takes them around a fifth of a second. So these memory banks are quite critical that we get them right and put the right beliefs in. So what I find is some of the work I'll do will be looking at someone and saying, what's your belief about, I'm keeping them with crossing the road to make it easy. What is your belief? And if we tease out of them that it's really, really dangerous and it's very likely I'll get hit, we can look at that rationally and rewrite the memory bank and say, let's dig that out and get rid of it and replace it with something much more rational. That as long as you do the following steps, you're safe. And that will alter their emotions. So you can imagine the same in competition. You know, I don't know the beliefs people hold, but if we start exploring them, then we can say, let's be more rational about it. So, for example, if somebody gets on the bike or in the pool or whatever they're doing, and their belief before they get in is, if I don't get a medal or don't come whatever position, I will have failed and it's the end of the world. Then it's very likely they'll underperform because they're so on edge, they're more focused on the consequence. If they get onto the bike in the pool or wherever with the belief that it may happen that I don't perform well, but I'm an adult, I can deal with it. And if that rings true and resonates with them, then they will be much more likely to be able to function and go on process and focus. So their beliefs and experience will tell us how they're going to approach their sport. So the computer system is quite critical. So that's your three systems, two interpreting and more or less having a bit of a battle. And one of them saying, as long as you program me, I'll remind both of you, but both of you can program me. Some of the beliefs you put in are helpful, some are unhelpful, but you can tidy it up. And the final bit of the jigsaw, which is the best bit, the computer can actually outrun the two of them. So if you get to a road and you program a child at 7, because I nearly got knocked over, and you take me as a parent and you make me look right, left, walk across, right, left, and you do this repeatedly, what you've done is you've programmed the computer automatically. So when the child goes to the road, before the human and chimp have a chance to interpret, they ask the computer, is there anything I should know? The computer will overrun them and it will just look right, left, and walk across the road, and there'll be no emotion. So the computer has that trick up its sleeve that neurologically it can go faster than both of the thinking systems.
And in a sporting context, is that then sometimes what's referred to as flow? When you're not having to think about things and your talent and your ability has reached such a level that you're able to do it without actually processing it necessarily, yes. And it all just seems to work.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And when I entered into the sort of sporting world, I started looking at the research that had been done on this. And obviously I'm coming from the angle of a doctor and as a scientist. And going into the floor in the zone, I was reading articles where they were saying, you know, it's almost like a once in a lifetime and it didn't make sense to me, because the way I'm viewing the mind is it's up to you. As long as you know what you're using, what the tools are and how the tools work, then you use the appropriate tools in the toolbox to get what you want. So I started looking at how do you get an athlete to go into the zone and actively go in. And that's what I started working with athletes across the sports and saying, look, let me show you, there is a way of getting into the zone. So we need to do an analysis of what your mind is like. We need to find out what the chimp and the human and the computer are like for you. You're unique. But if we use this model, it's just a model, so it's approximating, so we can access the mind. Then we can work out what's going to work best for you. I can't tell an athlete that. I can't do that. What I can do is we can work together to discover and start recognizing how to manage their mind. So I usually start away from the sport and ask them to do everyday life things. So we can start recognizing which system is working and which system they want to work. So again, I don't tell athletes to go into computer mode for sport. That is where the zone is. But if they say it doesn't work for me, I want to go into chimp mode, which is fight, flight, freeze, because I'm so hyped up and driven. It's not for me to say that doesn't work or that's not the best. It's for me to say, let's trial it out, and then to point out the risk of that system. Using the chimp system in sport, because it works, it only has one mechanism, that's fight, flight or freeze. Freeze is choking, basically, in terms of sport. Then the system is necessarily unstable for survival, which means people in fight mode can flick very suddenly into choke, or they can flick into flight mode. So it's not a stable system, but I'm not going to say to an athlete, don't use it. I'm going to say, how do you want to use it? Let's just recognise the risk. There's one more bit. Shall I keep going?
Yeah, please do.
This is heavy.
Fascinating.
The next bit, which I was a bit slow on the uptake here. It was in the 90s that I started working with patients, with various people to say, if I can talk to you and I can literally move the oxygen uptake in your brain, I can move you from chimp to human. And what I saw in conversation, and we've all done this, you know, friends do this. You have a coffee with someone, you talk through and you can feel yourself moving ground as they talk you through something stressful. And what they're doing is moving your chimp to human and rationalising things and getting perspective. And so I started doing that and thought, you know, if I can do this, surely I can get people to do it. And when I tried to do it, it didn't work. It just didn't work. So I started
doing it on themselves.
Yeah, I had to do it. But what I didn't see, which is why I was a bit slow, it took me 2 years to recognise that the operative word is it's a skill. No different to riding a bike or learning to swim, or it's a skill. You have to start and you'll get it wrong. You will get it wrong. Some people are brilliant. They get it almost the first day they start doing it. And some people do it naturally. They don't need me to come in.
Whereby they talk themselves out of that hyper-emotive state. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, they've recognised how to do this. Mm-hmm. They've recognised where to go with it and what the foundations are. So it isn't just about positive thinking, mm-hmm. which might work for some people. But underpinning that, the computer system is still fixed with its beliefs. So no matter how much you talk up the chimp, it may bite back, and people say to me it doesn't work for me because it just starts again and I'm just as anxious as I was. So I'm saying, well, that's because you've not actually addressed the chimp. So it's still producing anxiety. So I think if I look at the system and say, how do you get that skill? It's like anything. You practice. You need to know how to do it. You practice it for your unique machine. And then you have to accept that some people will get it very quickly and some will always struggle. But you can always improve. It's not that you can't do it. You can improve. It's like I can ride a bike, but I've never been an Olympian. You know, but it doesn't mean if I train hard, I can't improve. Of course I can improve, but I must accept there's a limit. So back in the 90s, that's what struck me. This is a skill. So some people I work with will get it. I'll teach them this. And other people, no matter how much I teach them, they'll really struggle. And it may take them 2 years, 4 years, 8 years before they suddenly get that ability and think, I'm getting there. But my experience is whoever takes it on and says, I want to do this seriously and look, will improve. I don't think I've ever had someone not improve, but I have had particularly sports people where they'll ask me to help them to stick to training or to really want to go at the Olympics. But deep down, they don't want to do it. And so therefore, I can't make them want to do it. So when we try this skill of let's go in with a positive attitude to training and to competing, it doesn't work. Because deep down, they're saying, this isn't really the life I want. And I'm now trapped between doing a life I want, but using this amazing ability I've got and get a medal.
So for anyone listening then who, I mean, I think that description, you know, of the zone and the computer and being able to use that efficiently is what everybody maybe strives for in any kind of efficient work, whether you're a writer, a business person, whatever that might be. And you mentioned the fight, flight and freeze. I think I'm naturally a freezer. Would, you might correct me, maybe it's not nature, maybe it's my chimp. But is it a case of trying to recognise what your individual red zone is or your chimp is, yes, and then working out how to best manage that and control it? And if it is the case of that, how do we manage our chimps?
Okay, yeah. And then this is the million-dollar question. The first is my starting point, this is just the way I work, so it's not for everybody. I've never said this. What I'm saying is if this resonates with you, then use it. So if it doesn't resonate, throw it out of the rubbish. If you start to recognise there is a difference between me and what the world is seeing of me, there's a difference between how I want to act and how my emotions appear to be hijacking me. If you can see that to start with, there is a discrepancy here, and you can start to get the idea there's a blood supply being shifted here, there's oxygen uptake, and if I switch it over, I definitely change over. So you recognise a need, first of all, and then you see the difference in the systems and you're willing to say, I can get it now. I get the neuroscience. And then you're willing to start putting the work in on the computer. So there's a lot of work to do on that. And then you start saying, right, now I've got the computer in place. I recognise me. I recognise the chimp. Then now we get to the point, right, now how do I start to manage the chimp? And the reason I sort of semi-corrected by saying you can't control the chimp is, there aren't circuits that control our emotions. There aren't any. If there were, then if we got frightened, we'd just stop. We'd just say, right, I don't want to do that. But it's not the way it works. Or if we're waking up in the night worried about something, we'd just say, oh, I'm going to stop now. But there aren't circuits to do that, which is why it's frustrating for us. So we get attacked again by this chimp that's still eating too much, still not exercising, still getting worried before a competition, or still waking up in the night and worrying. So the answer is then, how do we manage it? If we can't control it, how do you manage it to limit the damage or get it on board? And the secret there is that you've got to go through the computer. Because remember, the chimp must look into the computer before it moves. So if you as a human on the human circuit put into there your values, perspective, the facts you know are true, and you put them in and you get the computer in a solid place, then what happens is as the chimp goes to react, the computer either stops it by giving it the feedback, which calms it down, or the computer takes over and says, right, I will run your life at this point. I know how to think, I know how to act. I don't need your help. So that system will then give you the thoughts and the emotions you want because it's programmed to do it. So what you've got to do is learn, get some insights into yourself, learn the systems for you as a unique person, put in the beliefs that you know will stabilise you And I don't know what they are. I work them out with people individually. And then when you've done that, the chimp will start to operate via the computer. And what you should find happens is people say to me, I don't know why, I just didn't react. So I'll give you a good example of someone, a general member of the public, who a woman I was working with who, as you said, started by saying, I'm just a neurotic type person. I said, no, you're not neurotic. So she got it eventually. It's a chimp, and she got it. And then dramatically, she rang me very excited one day and said, this is amazing. She was having a house decorated. She'd had new carpets put in, and there was some painting going to go on in a room. And a guy walked in and he spilt a pot of blue paint on the carpet. And she said, I didn't react. Nothing happened, she said. And that was like unbelievable. I just thought, well, I'll get sorted. It was an accident. She said, there's no reaction. And she said, that wasn't the me that I knew. So what she's demonstrated perfectly is that I knew I was always calm and collected and I've got perspective. I'm an adult. It's a pot of paint on carpet.
And right? It's done now.
And it's done. And I now just, it's just a case of mopping up and getting it sorted. So there was no, that's what she wanted to do. That was her human. But her chimp was so strong in the past that it just overrode this and would catastrophically melt down. And then she'd be embarrassed later thinking, it's just ridiculous. And what she did is worked on the computer system so that when the paint went, within a fifth of a second, the computer had silenced the chimp and already responded. And she said it was like a very strange feeling that I recognised suddenly I've moved. So she was never anything other than that. She was always that woman. What she's done is she's learned to manage the chimp and get it so it's actually not going to do these catastrophic takeover bids. And you can see that in sports. If you go back to the sporting context, you know, I get this all the time. I get people saying things like, I turn up at sporting venues, particularly cyclists, and they say, and then I look and I see everyone else is super fit and I've not done the work and I'm panicking. And you're thinking, well, you can see it straight away. Is that really what you want to be doing? You know, you can't change your fitness level on the day of competition. You can't change other people and how strong they are. So it's a case of where do you want to put your focus? And as an adult, you're saying, well, you're in this situation now. Let's make the best of it. And then when we're finished, maybe I need to have a look at my plans for the next one and see why I was hijacked by my chimp that made it so I didn't train properly and I didn't come in the right frame of mind. So that's the kind of work I do.
So is there an argument then for the people who turn up in the velodrome with the least emotional or controlling chimp being naturally the ones who are predisposed to be the most successful?
Oh, now, there's complications. So now we're going to advanced level.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, exactly. The chimp isn't bad. It's a chimp. It's not good, isn't it? It's a chimp. So if you use that terminology, it's this powerful drive. It's got masses of motivation, which I don't work with. I work with commitment. It's got massive of energy.
Why not motivation, sorry?
Motivation is an emotion. Okay. So it's an unpredictable one. So if it works for you, great. But the problem is when it's not there, then you think you can't do it, which you can do it regardless. So we back to the chimp to say, right, you've got this powerful machine. You can, if you learn how to use this, call on it during sport, but it's dangerous to do so because you're saying I'm calling on an unstable system. So again, this goes back to the individual. And it's an advanced lesson to say, let's shift the blood supply into the chimp mode because it is irrational. It will make crazy decisions, which is what people say to me. You know, I lost
it. But sometimes work.
Well, it's the problem is if you look at it, it can work or it can be disastrous. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is, are you prepared? And that's what I'm saying. Sometimes it's worth using. If you know you're in the back foot and it's all over, use the chimp. You know, there's no point in not using it. But if you're in a position where it's touch and go, but there's time, then it's probably not the wisest thing to do. But it's up to people. All I do is go through it with them and say, what are the repercussions if it doesn't work? Or how would you compensate for that? Or if it does work, what are the potential repercussions? Because the chimp can feed itself. And once it's grabbed you, it's very hard to get it back. That's the rules. Once we're in chimp mode, we all know that when we lose things emotionally, it's very hard to come back again. The answer is prevent it. Prevent it from the first grabbing you and hijacking.
So I saw a YouTube video with you, and you started it off by saying, you know, imagine that you had this device or a machine that could make you happy, could make you more confident, could make you more successful, a more balanced individual. Yeah. And then the punchline is, you have that machine and it's your mind. Is it really, or can it really be as simple as that?
Yeah, because if you think all of our success is based around emotion and thinking and behaviours, that's the triad. Right?
All of our success.
Well, what else can it be other than just fortuitous, you know, in a result of environment or other people? We sort of probability-wise, we push our success by doing certain things. And most people, it's up to people, again, I'm not telling people, but I'm saying most people, when I challenge them and say, what do you think is going to make you more successful? Nearly everyone says, if I can manage my emotions. Everyone says, that's what can either make you successful or unsuccessful. How you use and manage emotion and thinking. And that is across the board. It's the same when I train doctors, when you're working with corporate people, businesses, teams, elite athletes, students, they all say the same. But if they said, no, I'll tell you what the factors are, but I haven't come up with any yet. No one's come up and said, these are the factors. Now, clearly, say you want to be a successful doctor, you need some knowledge. You know, you do need knowledge and you need skills and a certain approach. But on the other hand, with all of that knowledge, skills and approach, if your emotions or thinking get the better of you, it's gone. Whereas if your emotions and thinking are in line, then if you're limited in knowledge and your skills and so on, you can almost compensate because you get the best out of yourself. And that's really where I started from and I'm ending at, is what I'm about is you getting insights, understanding yourself, managing yourself by using skills and emotions, thinking, behaviour, and then getting the best out of yourself, whatever it is you're trying to do, whether it's relationships, personal stuff, professional stuff, getting a medal, competing. It doesn't matter. It's just, how do I use this machine?
So why do you think, for many of us, it's so difficult to be happy, to find happiness? If that exists within our head and is within our own power to control or engineer or whatever the terminology might be, why is that so difficult when we already seem to know so much about the workings of the human mind as a general populace compared to before?
Because people don't have a skill to manage their mind, so therefore it defaults, and so as long as it keeps defaulting, it will go towards worrying, concerns, ego. It will go in those directions which don't normally lead to happiness.
So how do we become happy?
We'll learn to understand and manage ourselves and use a skill that gets the best out of us by managing our minds. And then you link that to actually sitting down and saying, what is going to make you happy? Because a lot of people, when I challenge that and say, what's going to make you happy, can't tell me. So it's not a great starting point. It's like saying, go on a holiday, where are you going? I don't know. You know, you do have a destination. So I do like people to say, what would make you happy? And again, not everyone goes for happiness. I don't tend to. I'm not saying I wouldn't want to be happy. It's not the goal. My goal is much more peace of mind, which to me means a lot. And that, therefore, for me, for example, peace of mind would be, have you done the best you can do today? Did you represent yourself well? Did you manage your own chimp well? Did you put other people first? That's just my philosophy, because I know that will make me feel good. So for me to be satisfied and peace of mind is what I aim at. So I know what I need to do that. And therefore I've got to manage my own chimp to make sure it doesn't sabotage what I intend to do.
Do you manage your chimp well?
I think it's worn out trying to fight me. I think it's tired. I think like everybody else, we're built to work from the chimp. That is the default position. And that's part of the problem in the brain. Our default is chimp mode. So turning it into default human mode is very hard to do, but it's doable. So by and large, I work on this all the time. I work on it all the time, particularly since now I've come out with this model. Everything I do, I'm watched, everything. So I've got to try and be good. But at the end of the day, I'm forgiving as well. And I just think, I'm not going to beat myself up. My chimp gets the better of me. All I can do is apologise and try and learn from it.
Steve, it's been absolutely fascinating. You've given me so much to think about. I think there's going to be a lifelong project trying to manage my chimp, but thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
There you go then. Happiness, peace of mind, as simple as that. I think for anyone, understanding and managing our so-called chimps would be a lifelong project. But what a fascinating way to look at the workings of your own mind. And how logical and empowering even to think that the key to any kind of happiness or inner peace lies with us and how we manage ourselves. Obviously, it's not that simple for everyone, and mental health issues can derail even the hardiest of chimp trainers. But if you're interested in finding out more, I would recommend Dr. Steve Peters' book, The Chimp Paradox. Let me know how you get on with your own inner chimps. Is it a model for you? Does it resonate? I feel like I've only just scratched the surface, but I would love to delve a bit deeper and get to know my chimp a little bit better, if I'm feeling brave enough. Coming up in the next episode of When Orla Met.
Some women have a lower level of testosterone, and if you could boost your testosterone up to the level that's still legal, would you do it? Is that cheating? Something like that, that's naturally occurring anyway, but you're boosting it. How is that any different to boosting your creatine or your vitamin levels or your mineral levels? How is that cheating? So we had a discussion about it, and some of us said we would think about it, but it's a moral cheat because you know what you're doing.
That's When Orla Met Kelly Southerton, coming very soon. Thank you, as ever, to the wonderful Jonathan Rowe for editing this and all the episodes of When Orla Met, including the chats with Geraint Thomas and Dina Asher-Smith of this series. Now, if you missed those or any of the others from the first season, when I chatted to Judy Murray, Sarai P. McCoy, Mark Cavendish, Lizzie Deignan, and loads more, then do check out the back catalogue and make sure you subscribe to the podcast to not miss any of the chats still to come. I'd be really grateful if you could leave me a review on iTunes, if it's good, of course. And if you have any feedback, then do follow and get in touch with me on Twitter or Instagram at When Orla Met.